Hey, Bankless Nation, we haven't done one of these in a while. This is time for a Bankless Takes. We're talking about the role of L2s in Ethereum. And you know you're a big deal in crypto if Bankless will spend an entire show
talking
on one
about
single
your tweet.
Okay? This is a Vitalik tweet that we're going to talk about. This was a tweet, I think, that echoed around the world. It's pretty significant in my mind, in your mind, because it feels like it marks the end of an era and the beginning of a new era.
It feels like a bookend.
Yeah.
A bookend to not a tweet, but like another Vitalik post that we also did a dedicated podcast on in 2020, where he introduced the roll-up-centric roadmap in October of 2020. And now this is a episode about the conclusion of the roll-up-centric roadmap in 2026.
And I think that in particular is important. We have to choose our words carefully, because it's the conclusion not of the roll-up roadmap. The roll-up roadmap continues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it is the conclusion of the roll-up centric roadmap.
The centric word is being ejected.
Exactly. And so the roll-ups for 5 years in Ethereum were the center point. Mm-hmm. That was the focus. That was how we're going to scale Ethereum. And I think this tweet signifies something new. So let's get into it. What exactly did Vitalik say on, what day was it? February 3rd, 2026. What did he say?
February 3rd. What did he say and what he did not say is pretty important, because there were a lot of opinions and takes on Twitter that were just misunderstandings or bad readings of Vitalik's tweet. So
agreed.
What did Vitalik say? The punchline that I think Ryan and I agree on is like what this tweet, the punchline of this tweet is, for both of these facts, we'll talk about what these two facts are. For both of these facts, for their own separate reasons, means that the original path of layer twos and their role in Ethereum no longer makes sense. And we need a new path.
That's the ending of the centric part, right?
Yes, that's the ending of the centric path. And so Vitalik is basically saying Ethereum needs a new non-rollup centric roadmap. The two core bits of data as to why Vitalik comes to this conclusion, the two bits that he was referring to, is that stage two rollups and rollup interoperability has been far more slow and difficult than previously expected. Stage two rollups essentially means that rollups get to the point where they are complete decentralized code-based extensions of Ethereum, that they are the block space of a layer two. Stage two rollup is given the full faith and credit of Ethereum security.
That's right.
We cannot get there. It's been seemingly difficult as an industry to move our rollup ecosystem into stage two. We seemingly are stuck on stage one, and for good reason.
Yes, that's one part of it, the security part of it. The second mm-hmm. part of it is the interoperability part of it. And this mm-hmm. is the vision of rollups and scaling Ethereum block space, I thought, was shared liquidity across all of these rollups. And that's why
shared network effects, shared state,
shared. And it's not shared. It feels very fragmented. And that's why he mentions interop as the second. So that's the first core bit. What's the second?
Have you checked out Showdown yet? Showdown is poker rebuilt from the ground up by some of the world's top players in Hearthstone, Magic the Gathering, and poker. With Showdown's action cards, an additional layer of gameplay is added onto the game of poker. Action cards give dueling players more agency, strategy, and tricks for winning the pot. Built on MegaETH's real-time blockchain, Showdown has completely abstracted away everything crypto. Privy hides the wallet, there's seamless payment and deposit flows, and MegaETH makes everything happen in real time and zero fees, making Showdown ready to onboard your friends without any friction. It's also free to play and built without any pay to win mechanics. Players compete in the free market and with real money on the line. Showdown is played with MegaETH's USDM in the background. So when players deposit money into Showdown, it's converted into USDM, connecting Showdown to the USDM flywheel that all MegaETH apps contribute to. You can play Showdown for free so you can practice and get good before you get comfortable with real USDM on the line. Experience poker like never before with Showdown. Check it out at alpha.showdown.game. What if you could trade gold, Forex, and global markets with the same tool and speed that you use for crypto? That's exactly what BitGet TradFi unlocks. After strong beta demand, including over $100 million in single-day gold trading volume, BitGet TradFi is now live for all users. Inside of your existing BitGet account, you can trade 79 instruments across Forex, precious metals, indices, and commodities, all settled directly in USDT. No platform switching and no fiat conversions. This is BitGet's universal exchange vision in action. Crypto and traditional finance side by side. You get deep liquidity, low slippage and leverage up to 500x, letting you apply crypto strategies to macro markets. New to TradFi? Start with gold. The gold-USD pair is liquid, macro-driven, and a familiar natural bridge between crypto and traditional markets. Try trading gold on BitGet now at BitGet.com. Click the link in the show notes for more information. This is not financial advice. The second core bit is that layer one scaling is out now, actually catching up to a meaningful degree. The ZKVM, which I think was an understated part of this tweet, and we'll go into why, but the ZKVM and overall layer one block space is going to, quote, projected to increase greatly in 2026. So Vitalik just highlights like, actually, we can just do the things on the layer one. Not only can we scale the layer one in like the traditional sense with more throughput and faster block times, but we also have this ZKVM thing, which will massively scale Ethereum far beyond what any other layer one could ever do ever.
That's
and
the
so
bullish
let's
piece.
Go there. Let's yeah. go down that path.
Yeah, that's the bullish piece. And that was not available, importantly, five, six years ago.
Correct.
In
2020. We thought ZKVM is 5, 6 years ago were a decade away.
Right.
And turns out they're kind of here today.
So those are the two core bits why the rollup centric roadmap as it was in 2020 mm-hmm. and as Ethereum, the track that Ethereum had been on no longer makes sense. There's some more happening here though, mm-hmm. David, and this is some association of the question of like, what is Ethereum? The Ethereum brand, the values yeah. of the community. And both this tweet mentions that, and then he tweeted something later, a couple days later, that we may want to touch on too, mm-hmm. but he said, L1 does not need L2s to be branded shards because L1 itself is scaling. So that's the point we talked about. And he said, we should stop thinking about L2s as literally being branded shards of Ethereum with the social status and responsibilities that this entails. Instead, we can think of L2s as being a full spectrum.
Right.
This gets into part of the reason, I think, this is my theory on why Vitalik felt he needed to tweet this mm. at this point in time, because as we'll discuss later, a lot of the elements of this were already obvious to many, and indeed the Ethereum roadmap had already shifted. I mean, you could already
yes.
feel it. Probably shifted yes. 12 months ago, let's
this
say, right?
This tweet feels a lagged reflection of what the market and the industry has already digested.
And actually what I think Vitalik thinks at this point, I mean, I yeah. think he's thought this for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Part of the reason or the psychology of why to tweet this publicly goes into, as is my take anyways, what is Ethereum? And this idea of like, mm-hmm. call it, I don't want to use words that are too strong, but a laundering of the Ethereum brand.
Oh, or, I think that's very, very accurate.
Okay, in many cases it is. Or yeah. a dilution of yeah. what Ethereum means. Because mm-hmm. if all of these L2s are Ethereum, but you're not getting Ethereum level guarantees mm-hmm. and Ethereum network liquidity, how can you actually say they are Ethereum? And this gets
right.
into kind of the social piece of this, which there had been a meme that many Ethereum people had started with, that you and I even started with, I believe, because mm-hmm. this was our core belief,
yeah.
actually.
Mm-hmm.
L2s are Ethereum.
L2s are Ethereum.
This is kind of like what we thought the roadmap was. This is
yes.
what we thought we were building. You and I abandoned this meme probably like 18 to 24
ago, yeah.
months ago
yeah.
when it
mm-hmm.
became obvious like, oh, shoot, when I go into another chain, it's not Ethereum. I'm not getting
yeah.
all of the, it's not stage two and I don't get the liquidity. And we started pushing back on that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been hard for the community to
digest, yes.
Yeah. And so go ahead.
I think with this tweet, we can formally say layer twos or Ethereum is dead. It was already dead. Now, like, there's no way for layer twos to be Ethereum. And this is what we are admitting to. And it's something like to go back into the shoes of October of 2020, mm-hmm. when the rollup centric roadmap was introduced. The plan here was that we would make stage two rollups, stage two being functional equivalent extensions of Ethereum block space without any sort of lack of any sort of property rights or guarantees of Ethereum. The guarantees of the Ethereum layer one, because layer twos are stage two, get extended without loss,
yep.
no lossiness. And then with interop, we would have these stage two extensions that would be shared state, shared liquidity. And so therefore, with some abstractions, we would be able to abstract everything and it would be one unified experience.
That's right.
That was always the plan.
That was
so like stage two rollups was like, yes, Optimism, Arbitrum, ZK Sync would build their rollups. But with stage two and interop standards, we would collapse everything into one shared experience. This is what we are saying, that like this is not happening and we need to account for that. And therefore, when we say layer twos are Ethereum, that just cannot be accurate, because now these branded shards are their own thing.
Yes.
And I think when he says we can consider these layer twos to be full spectrum, full spectrum layer twos, it's kind of unlocking the potential of layer twos to be anything, which was always the promise and always the potential of layer twos. So you can be anything. You can have any sort of relationship with Ethereum that you want, and it doesn't have to be any sort of constrained, you must be a layer two, you must conform to the interop standards, you must be an extension of Ethereum. And we're kind of like opening up the design space and going away from layer twos or Ethereum.
That's right. And I think there's a concession here. And we've read it earlier when Vitalik said L2 progress around full security of Ethereum and interop has been slower and more difficult than originally expected. I think that's true. I don't think that there's something insidious about the roadmap. We're going to launch all these L2s and we're going to invest in all these L2 tokens and VCs are going to get rich. And, you know, we always knew this wouldn't work out. I genuinely think the Ethereum community, Vitalik as well, all the participants of the L2s and all the teams we talked to in those early days, they thought they were building a mirror of Ethereum L1 block space. Indeed, that was what they were trying to build. Mm-hmm. The tech just couldn't get us there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my perspective on it. I don't think there's anything insidious here going on. But now that we are in 2026, the meme of L2s are Ethereum does not ring true.
Right.
And so we have to recognize that. And probably it's never been true. That was the ambition. But we have to recognize that we are never going to accomplish that full ambition. Now, I do want to put an asterisk here, which is it's also not true that L2s are just sidechains. Okay?
Correct. Yeah.
And so if you want to, like, I mean, this is not in mimetic form, but L2s do inherit some of the security guarantees and a little bit of the liquidity, I guess, preferences of Ethereum. So they do inherit some of it.
Yes.
So you can't put that in meme form, but there are things here that are, I guess, more nuanced than just saying, no,
there is a symbiotic relationship between the layer twos and the layer one.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And so we could swing too far in the other direction. I guess the second Vitalik tweet also, he put a tweet out a couple days later. He said he's been following reactions to what I said on L2s 1.5 days ago. And he clarified a few more things here. Actually, I felt like he was mostly restating what he had already said, though in clear terms. And a part that we missed in his original tweet is he sees a role for L2s to fill a very differentiated, a much more differentiated place now in the updated, you know, L2 roadmap of 2026, called these Gen 2 L2s, which is, it's less an EVM clone of Ethereum that you kind of hook an optimistic bridge to and you port all the apps from Ethereum over into these L2s. And it's more differentiated chains, things like app chains like Lighter or privacy chains like Aztec, like bringing something net new to this alliance of chains that Ethereum L1 does not already have, especially when it's in scaling mode.
Differentiation, I think, is the key word here. Back in 2022 to 2023, when the layer two era was really in full swing, there was a huge push for Ethereum equivalents, EVM equivalents. I mean, I was pushing for that because that's how I saw we get to this, you know, roll up ecosystem that is one big shared pool of state and liquidity. That is dead. Ethereum equivalence is dead. It's the same thing as layer twos are not Ethereum. Ethereum is Ethereum. EVM equivalence is now just redundant. And now it's go to the opposite end of the spectrum and be very, very differentiated. Have a specialized VM like ASIC or Starknet. And do things that the Ethereum layer one can never do, like scale like Mega ETH, be an app chain like Lighter. Just don't do the same thing that Ethereum is doing, because Ethereum is going to do that thing.
Vitalik sums it up like this in this second follow-up tweet. Basically, number one, do something, if you're an L2, here's my advice for L2s, he says. Number one, do something that brings something actually new to the table. And number two, the vibe should match the substance. The degree of connection to Ethereum, your public image, should reflect the degree of connection to Ethereum that your thing has in reality. And that second point gets to kind of the laundered reputation of Ethereum, right? If you're like a stage zero L2, like, do you get to call yourself part of Ethereum and sort of launder the reputation of Ethereum with that brand when you don't offer the things that Ethereum is actually offering?
Right. Yeah. And we saw that, like, one of the worst examples of this was the Movement layer two, the Move VM as a layer two on Ethereum. The whole project ended up just being an unsavory grift, to use different, to use harsh words. And like, this was what was allowed when we don't control what the future of Ethereum scaling look like, is like, there are barbarians at the gate. And if the Ethereum community allows branded shards to come in and raise VC dollars and promote themselves as extensions of Ethereum to the Ethereum community, and the Ethereum community praises them because all layer twos are good, this is a failure mode. And that started to happen and went too far.
Agreed. All right, let's get to the community reaction, and then you and I can give our takes on what this means and what happened. So what was the community reaction to this?
Yeah, like five different categories. There's just like praise for Vitalik's like honesty, adaptability, and truth seeking. There were a lot of I told you so's and criticisms and frustration over delays and wasted effort. John Charbonneau had this tweet where he tweeted out this meme saying, sorry about all the mean shit I said when I was right. Like, I think he gets that tweet. He gets to tweet that tweet. I'm not going to complain. Max Resnick, who was one of the original like layer two roadmap is broken, he just tweeted out. The skeptics, yeah. He tweeted out, I'm very much enjoying reading this app today, which is just like a coded of just like, I'm drinking my tea and enjoying like reading all this.
Those are two individuals I would say that, you know, heart and mind have defected somewhat to the more monolithic
strategy. Yeah, they defected because
Solana.
They were like, this layer two shenanigans is bullshit and we should change it. And then when they realized it's not changing, they went to Solana. That's
right.
What happened. Yeah. There was agreement that layer twos aren't Ethereum. Stephen Goldfeder had a very good tweet thread where he started off with
CEO Arbitrum of Arbitrum, we should say.
CEO of Arbitrum. Number one tweet in the thread starts off with Arbitrum is not Ethereum, which is a divergence from previous rhetoric.
Sure.
And so like previously Arbitrum was Ethereum, now Arbitrum is not Ethereum. And like I think this is the correct thing to say. The cool thing about Arbitrum is that, you know, despite Arbitrum also being in the EVM equivalence camp, they were like one of the first ones, them and Optimism, to be EVM equivalent. Arbitrum also established its own unique identity and culture that was distinct from Ethereum. And I think that has served them very, very well.
I agree. So Stephen, many of the Ethereum community used to go around saying that L2s are Ethereum, or Stephen has said in the past, Arbitrum is Ethereum. Right. And I just want to point out that while that's not correct, that's also not entirely wrong either.
Correct. Yes.
So the truth of that is Arbitrum is partially Ethereum. Mm-hmm. Or it's like Arbitrum is an ally of Ethereum. Or like...
Yeah, there's Arbitrum, an overlap in the Venn diagram.
Yeah. Arbitrum is part of the Ethereum alliance. So I don't think it's necessarily dishonest to like say Arbitrum is Ethereum, because it is. It's just like not the complete... story here. You have to put an asterisk and you have to explain what you're actually talking about there.
Arbitrum flies the flag of Arbitrum, and it does so inside of the Ethereum empire.
That's kind of right. Okay, so the way, if we want to analogize this to nation states, which I love doing, as you know, David, okay, so I think it's less a state in the union the way Colorado is a state in the union of the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's more like an ally. It's more like, you know, Sweden being part of NATO, which is protected by the United States of America, and being this network of allies. It's sort of like the alliance of Ethereum rather than sort of the nation state of Ethereum.
Laws of Ethereum. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so that's one analog.
But the laws of Ethereum would have been able to have been established if we had come up with very strong interoperability standards, and that would have been a much stronger binding alliance between layer twos, but we didn't.
That's right. Steven's whole post, I thought, was fantastic. And it's pretty long, and we don't have to read all of it, but there's some more worth pulling out here. What else does he say?
There's a tweet that I liked that he said, Vitalik is correct that the rollup story has evolved over time. In 2018, rollups were primarily created for scaling. This is true. We were like, oh, we're going to scale with rollups. He finishes and says, today, they're as much about customization and dominion as they are about scaling. That is to say, even if a layer one could scale infinitely, there are plenty of institutions that nevertheless want their own customized environment. And this is the market sector that Arbitrum has really penetrated into. Why did they win Robinhood as a customer of Arbitrum Orbit technology? because Arbitrum Orbit technology is part of the Ethereum EVM tech stack, which is extremely robust, extremely developed, the best developer ecosystem in crypto, undoubtedly. It's the Microsoft Excel for blockchains. And Robinhood gets to customize it as they see fit, and they get to control it, and they get to own it. It is their ledger. And that's the customizability that Vitalik also echoed in his tweet. It was like, this is all about customized control. This is not about scale. You're not scaling Ethereum. You are able to customize things to fit your specific needs. And that's what Arbitrum is, Stephen, is identifying, like where Arbitrum is bent towards.
I think that's right. And I want to get into a critique that I've heard from some in the Ethereum community, other than a critique that maybe you'll express later, which is like, why did it take so long to say this
for
out loud,
sure.
Right?
Okay,
so you got that.
Eagerly trying to get to that point.
Okay, but the other point is like, Vitalik, you could have said it in a different way. And this is how Stephen expresses this. So if there is the perception with the way Vitalik said things, maybe the communication that he thinks L2s are a dead end or dead, right? This is Stephen's worry. He says, I worry that if Ethereum is perceived as being hostile to rollups, it will push them away from the ecosystem. To be clear, it won't push them to launch on Ethereum L1. Instead, they'll launch their own L1 like Arc and Tempo, and Ethereum will ultimately lose out. This is a delicate communication balancing act, right? Mm-hmm. And so some have criticized Vitalik's tweet for being too aggressive or like trying to push L2s out of the ecosystem, or that it's just like, That's not how I read it. Some people read it this way, that it's just like not a good commercial stance for Ethereum to say these things, because at a time when we're trying to attract L2s, we want to give them the good graces of Ethereum. We want to say you're good and you're okay and like welcome to the community, rather than kind of like push them away for not being quote unquote pure enough. I mean,
I don't think that's a valid conclusion of Vitalik's tweet. There was a lot of bad readings of Vitalik's tweet on Twitter. And I consider anyone who is like, oh, Ethereum is abandoning its L2s, just did not read the tweet correctly.
Okay, well, let's get to some more takes here. This is one from Polychain. What is this?
Oh, excuse me, Polygon. Polygon.
Oh, Polygon.
It just retweeted out the retweet of Vitalik, and they just said, due to market conditions, we now identify as a sidechain, which is like a facetious admission of kind of like what Polygon is a sidechain. And finally, we can talk plainly about that. I think that's one of the benefits of this tweet, is like people are finally just like ripping off this aspirational ideal for what the layer two roadmap could be, and now just speaking plainly about what it actually is.
That's refreshing. It's refreshing to me. It is funny because Polygon is an ally for certain.
For sure.
They did so much for Ethereum in terms of investment, in terms of just like mindshare, in terms of onboarding during previous cycles. Mm-hmm. They've done so much for Ethereum, but they're not kind of in the alliance of L2s, right? Because they are somewhat of a proof of stake sidechain.
Yeah.
So they're not a part of NATO, but they're still an Ethereum ally. Again, it's nice to be able to just redefine these terms and for them to be able to say it. John Charbonneau, again, you said, don't shoot the messenger. Is he just...
Okay, this is a tweet that I've really, really enjoyed.
Okay, let me go find this.
There were people stating this exact problem that Vitalik eventually stated in this tweet in 2026 in 2021 and 2022. So the part of the industry, part of the frustration here, is that different people who have identified this problem in Ethereum and then got loud about it started in an order that was like very unpalatable and offensive to the Ethereum community, and has slowly worked its way to inside the community of more palatable people and eventually gets all the way to Vitalik. So starting with Kyle Samani, who identified this problem and then invested heavily in Solana because of what he identified as a market weakness in the Ethereum strategy. It's Kyle, like enemy of the state number one to the Ethereum community. The next person after that, Max Resnick, very offensive individual, kind of just like Max doesn't do himself any favors. Also said the same thing, goes to Solana. John Charbonneau, like closer to the Ethereum community, still offensive to many. And then, like, I'll even throw then after John comes somebody like us, like Bankless.
I definitely think that.
In 2024, we were like, hey, guys, I don't know if this is working out for us.
Actually, okay, so here's the thing. I think that Kyle, obviously Team Solana,
for sure,
like always paints Ethereum in the worst possible light and that there's no use case and all of these things. Like Max at some level, I mean, as evidenced by him defecting to Solana too, is not sort of not in the camp of rooting for Ethereum and hoping for its best. John is someone who is an investor, so he's somewhat more pragmatic about it, but doesn't actually believe that ETH is a store of value asset and can compete against Bitcoin. Bankless, we, however, do. We are like have been Team Ethereum for a very long time. We do still believe, you know, even though the market is telling us otherwise, that ETH is a store of value asset and has the biggest opportunity to compete against Bitcoin on that. Even when we were saying it, it kind of,
we got branded, not everyone, obviously, but we got branded, we got called enemies of Ethereum. During the years of 2024, when we brought Max and John on the podcast and Kyle Somani to talk about this problem. And then like, oh, Bankless is an enemy of Ethereum because we were saying, guys, this roadmap ain't working for us.
Yeah, let's talk about what parts aren't working.
And then after us, you know, maybe it'd be Anthony Sizzano. I don't think he really ever did that. But then it goes to Vitalik. And now that Vitalik is saying it, like it's finally palatable for the Ethereum community, which I find frustrating because there were, and I'm sure there were other people listening to Bankless who are like, guys, why are you so naive about this? Kyle Somani, Max Resnick, and John Charbonneau have figured this out years ago. Why are you guys taking so long?
Yeah, but that's just how things happen. I mean, I think that's how opinions change. That's how it happens, right? Imagine listening to Kyle Somani about everything on Ethereum. You just shut the project down. You'd believe that decentralization doesn't matter. You'd believe there's no such thing as ETH as a monetary asset. You just, why not shut it down? If you listen to everything that guy says, okay? So you have to process it and you have to filter it, but it did take a while for that to happen. There's another take here you've got from Patrick McCory.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I read this morning. He says that his interpretation of what Vitalik is saying is that it's not that rollups have failed. In fact, it's the opposite. Rollups have differentiated themselves relative to Ethereum and have succeeded hugely, but this is just not what was anticipated in the original vision. So it's a very big point. It's like rollups are doing great.
They're just
doing their own thing, and it's not the Ethereum thing.
They are. And you even see, and I mean, rollups are scaling Ethereum like right now, even even sort of the closest EVM match to L1, they are there. Ethereum is what, 40 transactions per second now? Base is, you know, pushing 800, something like that. Arbitrum is like 1,000, right? And they're scaling too. I mean, that is helpful. And then you're right. We already do have these differentiated L2s that have popped up due to market forces.
And then the last take that I like came from my friend, John Sterlacci. I think you are watching Foundation, right?
Yes.
The Foundation TV show.
Yes.
Yeah. Also a book series, mainly known as a book series, but now a TV show.
Isaac Asimov.
Yeah. So like this requires to understand this a little bit, but I'll do my best to explain. He goes, the Harry Seldon approach to leadership doesn't work. Okay. What's the Harry Seldon approach to leadership in this movie series, TV series? It spans it's a very deep cut. It spans over like 1,000 years. Yeah. And so people go into like cyber sleep and they extend their lifespan in order to do this intergalactic, huge coordination problem across vast amounts of time. And Harry Seldon is this guy who comes up with this plan for the next 1,000 years of how we come to like coordinate across this very future problem that we need to like prepare for that's 1,000 years, multiple generations in the future. So the idea here is centralized, predictive, long-term master planning by a single genius or small elite fails in practice because the real world is based on messy human systems. You can't set a grand plan in motion and expect it to unfold perfectly via predetermined interventions. Real leadership needs to be adapted, responsive, and decentralized and account for chaos, individual initiative, black swans, or unpredictable actors. Not rigid top-down orchestration, assuming people will behave by predictable particles. Over-reliance on inevitable trajectories or this plan will save us leads to brittleness, detachment from reality, or failure when anomalies appear. Sure. I think this is such an astute comparison as to how the Layer 2 roadmap got implemented and why it failed.
I actually think that that's exactly what's happening, though, right? This is like top-down and bottom-up discovering that this didn't work from a market perspective and adjusting. Mm-hmm. So this is just like not making the Harry Seldon mistake. The Harry Seldon mistake would be
now. 2026, we are learning to not make the Harry Seldon mistake. But I think for the last 5 years of time, it has been that.
A little bit, but as evidenced by this pivot, it's all fine. This is how it works out. We went, we tried something.
It's late.
It's later than it needed to be, but it's not too late. We'll get to some takes on this. Let me ask you some questions just to prompt. Three options for you. Was the rollup-centric roadmap wrong? The whole idea of, remember, modular versus monolithic, right? Ethereum's going the modular path and, you know, other chains going the monolithic plan. Let me give you three options. One, it was dead wrong. Two, it was partially wrong. Three, it was still the right play at the time. What do you think?
Somewhere between partially wrong and still the right play at the right time, leaning towards more partially wrong. The more correct thing would have been to identify the rollup roadmap, not ever say the word centric, and run with we the Ethereum ecosystem has a monopoly on smart contract chains.
Sure.
And we need to make sure we never give that up. And now that everyone is on the Ethereum layer one, we need to aggressively scale the layer one as fast as reasonably possible without sacrificing Ethereum's values. And in parallel, because we love doing things in parallel, we will also develop the roll-up roadmap in parallel, and it will not have the word centric in it. We will keep and point the word centric at the Ethereum layer one. Would have been the best.
We got to figure it out. But here's why I'm probably more three. It was still the right play at the time, but also part two, because we could have adjusted sooner, is because hindsight is 2020, man. We had no idea how this was going to work out. Like, it's really rich of us, like 6 years later, to be like, hey, 2020 idiots, you should have seen this coming.
But the thing is, like, some people did. Some people did see it
earlier,
coming.
But not in 2020. Let me go through another thought exercise with you, which is I put this together. What we thought versus what we got, and see how much you agree. What we thought, this is back in 2020, the thought, right, is that L2s would fully scale Ethereum block space and scaling would be solved. What we got instead was fragmented liquidity, not Ethereum level security on our L2s, and this idea of like sidechain plus, which is kind of what L2s ended up being.
That's right.
Here's another one. Thought, what we thought, L2s would unleash new use cases and apps, but what we got is mostly a lot of DeFi on L2s that was similar to the L1.
Yep.
What we thought was stage two would be a breeze. We'll get there. It's no problem. What we got is it's really, really freaking hard. Yep. And do chains and users even want it? I'm not sure that I want a chain that can't
that
be...
we do not.
That can't be corrected or updated if there's a bug. What we thought, L2s would bring value accrual to ETH the asset, either as money, ETH is money, people using it in the ecosystem, or fees. What we got instead was low fees generated by L2s and also other assets started invading some of these L2s, right? Tokenized Bitcoin is a thing. Stable coins are a big thing. So we didn't even get the money, monetary value accrual. What we thought is ETH would go to 10K this cycle. And what we got was barely an all-time high, barely. And we got bleeding on the ETH Bitcoin ratio. We were beaten at some level. Ethereum was beaten this cycle by app chains. In particular, a pure store of value app chain, which is called Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
What do you think of those? You agree
those
with that?
Those are all right. I agree with all of those.
All right. Let's give our takes and a retrospective.
You want to go first?
Okay. Indulge me.
Oh, I'm happy to go first. I've got some stuff I would
indulge
like to get
me.
Off my
and
chest.
I got to jump soon, so we got to constrain our time. We probably have like 15 minutes. I'm going to zoom out and give you my take on the retrospective.
Okay.
So there were definitely some wins over the last five years in L2s, and I don't want to downplay that. Massive wins. We had this successful alliance of chains. We delivered ZK EVM tech, discovered ZK, fleshed that tech tree out. It's freaking awesome. That's coming back to the L1. Without the L2 roadmap, we wouldn't have had that. We had massive user onboarding on Base and Arbitrum. It's all EVM network effect. It's all good. And plus, I would say, this might have been the only option at the time in 2022. If you're going to scale Ethereum and also keep the decentralized promise. And the decentralized promise is Bitcoin level decentralization or better. That was the only option in 2020. Okay. So we preserved that through all of this. That's in the win column. There were three missteps. I think that maybe the first one we could have seen the most and prevented. Yeah. The first was we missed an interop strategy with
L2s.
For
sure. So that was the biggest miss.
If we were doing the L2 roadmap, we totally could have done this. Ethereum totally could have done this. It could have prioritized shared liquidity, and you're not an L2, you're not connected to the Ethereum network unless we have a liquidity standard here and it's shared from Ethereum to the L2s. Now, I don't know the technical, like how this could have been made possible, but there should have been at least a standard for this. Mm-hmm. The Cosmos ecosystem, they had a standard. They had a, like ICP standard. Out, yeah. Mm-hmm. We could have done something much more here and we didn't. So we didn't transmit Ethereum's killer DeFi liquidity network effect to L2s. And it became this war of all against all, where the L2s didn't really share liquidity. And so they were all competing with each other. And it felt more like a bunch of side chains rather than a true alliance. Number mm-hmm. two, that was the first mistake. Number two, it took us too long to figure this out. We could have course corrected probably 24 months sooner, yeah. I feel like.
Yeah.
And we didn't. We could have realized that the coordination glue just like wasn't there to make a tight united chains of Ethereum, which was the vision. We had this more fragmented loose alliance. And then we could have pragmatically adjusted the strategy. But instead, we were still too hopium filled. We relied more on it'll probably work out. There was hope. The last thing, I got to say this too. I feel like we lost some focus on the use case. So the core use case for max decentralized block space, we've seen this. It's been enough time in crypto. We've seen this. It's slow DeFi. It's money. It's ETH as a store of value. That is the single most important app for Ethereum. And we chased all these secondary narratives, right? You know, social and all of these other things that could be enabled by L2s. And we forgot the core narrative. We didn't make that a shelling point for Ethereum. Hey, builders, we have a store of value on ETH. We have DeFi. We have deep liquidity. Come build your money thing here. I feel like leadership could have pushed that a little bit more. It is not as bad as it feels. I think these mistakes and the feeling that we have right now, probably due to price, it's a lagging indicator. So yep. 12 months ago, the course started to correct and the pivot started to happen actually. And so we're not now just waking up and realize this. Things have already been put in motion to course correct. We also have ZK, which is a gift from the gods. It is Ethereum's Uno card. I think it's going to totally bail out any mistakes of the L2.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
And I do think the backlash is too lashy right now. In other words, like the reports of L2's demise are greatly exaggerated. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so there's this counter swing of the pendulum being like, oh, okay, well, I guess L2s are useless. They're not useless. The wins are actual wins for corporate, for chains that want their own sovereignty, for some of these app chain type use cases. Net, L2s are good for Ethereum. They have been good for Ethereum. We've distributed a whole bunch of the Ethereum development to well-funded, highly competent teams. Mm-hmm. That's a massive win as well. And it's a core advantage. No one else is building L2s on any other chain. They're all on Ethereum. Right. And that this partial side quest is a huge win that Ethereum will bring forward. All right, that's my rant. That's my take.
I agree with all of those. Some of mine overlap with yours. So I'll start with mine. I have the good and the bad side for mine. The good is the ZKVM precompile. That needs to be Ethereum's like merge or 4844 dank sharding. Like, we need to elevate the importance of the ZKVM hard fork that's going to come, where we put ZKVM scale and Ethereum scales at 1000x its current speed as our new North Star. Like, the Ethereum community needs to rally around that, like we once did the
merge.
This
is native rollups, right?
This is native rollups. Yes. The Ethereum layer one is going to become a ZKVM and is going to be so fast and so scaled that it's the Manhattan Project, that once we deploy this, like, no other layer one will ever come after that fact, because the Ethereum layer one will be so scaled. And so I think we need to, as a community, elevate that
focus,
that strength. Yes, focus on it and deploy it. That's the good. And I think that was understated in Vitalik's tweet. The other good thing is that the layer two business model is undefeated. Nonetheless, despite whatever this tweet is about, we are taking the centric away from Ethereum. Layer twos are still the best business model in crypto. You don't need to pay for the infrastructure, the very costly infrastructure to run your chain. You don't need to issue your assets to pay for validators. The day after Vitalik's tweet, Pay, which is a Celestia-based app chain, migrates to becoming an Ethereum rollup. The business model will be undefeated. This is why a lot of the layer twos, like, some people might be worried about, like, is Base going to become a layer one? Is like Arbitrum going to be a layer one? No, they don't want to pay for the infrastructure cost. The layer two business model is still as good as it ever was.
And the other good thing that I really like is that layer twos, our Ethereum is dead. We don't have to ever mention about that. We can sweep that under the rug and pretend it never happened. The bad.
Yeah.
Wasted time and lost effort. This is my main gripe. Like so many people have been like, response to this has just been obvious for so long. Like Mary tweeted out, this has been obvious for years. Clouded tweeted out something that I thought was I aligned with. The annoying part about the Vitalik layer two shenanigans for me is like, thanks for having hundreds of billions of dollars of our industry's liquidity going into funding these layer twos over the past 3 years while on-chain DeFi choked, as Vitalik called it, Ouroboros. And then Joseph DeLong got even spicier and said, Ethereum kind of feels like Vitalik's little Urbit-esque side project building a temple to nothing. And this is kind of how I feel. There was a too large amount of capital mismanagement and poor capital allocation, and we didn't course correct in time. And a lot, I don't know, dude, a lot of people's lives went into building this future that the Ethereum community, led by Vitalik, identified. And sure, like if we got it wrong and course corrected in time, like excusable. What's not excusable is that like so many people identified this, and like nonetheless, capital continued to be mismanaged. Like people continue to spend their lives working towards this vision that like much of the industry had identified as obsolete. And this is what Vitalik does. He like waits until he's like 100% sure. And like there's this fundamental disconnect in timing where Vitalik is like happy being overly patient to make sure that Ethereum eventually gets to the right spot. And he doesn't have the position that the rest of the industry wants him to be in, which is some sort of like CEO, executional leader who's ready to be aggressive and take risks. And there's just like a mismatch of urgency that people like you and me is like, we have competition. Like there's competition out there. Solana is competing with us. They're taking advantage of our weaknesses. And that is the time cadence that most people are on. And Vitalik is like, I'll wait until I'm 99.9% sure that this is the right thing before I tweet this. And it wastes money and time, and it's so inefficient. And we as a community get hurt as a result of that. And like, I think everyone would appreciate it if he was in a little bit more of an executional position that had a stronger feedback loop of signal, where he could actually push forward on the gas a little bit more aggressively. And I don't think that's that crazy to ask for.
Well, now that you got that out, you doing okay, David? Okay. I feel like that was some venting.
Yeah, dude.
This is the community venting.
Yes. Yes. Like, so it was.
Okay. So I get that. And I also think that the weakness and the trade-off that you're pointing out is basically disillusionment. And you see people that kind of leave. Yeah. You get people like Joseph saying this. I joined Ethereum to displace the banks, not this kind of like side project thing that just like, I don't know what it is. That same style that Vitalik has, I also think is a massive strength.
Sure. Sure.
It's like, because it's just like slow to consensus. It's kind of like slow DeFi, right? So you end up getting in the right direction. And also the trade-off for like Vitalik is Ethereum has preserved the thing that it set out to preserve, which is max decentralization.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Vitalik is not willing to sacrifice that. And he's done so, I think, as a leader with integrity. I don't want him to be the CEO of Ethereum. Like, I like him in the place that he is, which is he has spiritual guidance and sort of social, like, here's what we should do. And he's willing to course correct. I don't know.
The problem is he occupies the space of the CEO of Ethereum, and he doesn't allow anyone else to inhabit it just by being there.
I get the challenge, right? It's sort of the, what's that that famous essay, the tyranny of
structurelessness?
Structurelessness.
This is Vitalik's pattern, is that he leaves voids of power. He leaves power vacuums wherever he goes, which is what the layer two centric roadmap always was, is a power vacuum that layer twos tried to inhabit with their own standard, their own branded chart.
There's a tyranny of structurelessness, but there's also a upside of experimentation on structurelessness. Like, we are letting the market decide, and we are trying all of these things. And this is why I think you can come with more confidence that as long as Ethereum has preserved decentralization, some of the core values it somehow managed to preserve. It didn't go down the trap of trying to scale through shortcuts, right?
Yeah.
The market will kind of figure it out. As long as Ethereum adapts, it will take on these technologies and make its system better. And that's the benefit of like, let 1,000 flowers bloom. But unfortunately, 900 of those flowers are going to go die. And yeah. people are going to get disillusioned in the process.
That's people's jobs. That's people's lives. That's like hundreds of billions of dollars of malinvestment. Like that is a very significant cost. It feels like an unforced error. It doesn't feel like a double-edged sword. It feels like an unforced error.
I'm partially there and partially not. I see the trade-off with the good there. But let's bring this to a close, David, mm-hmm. and ask some remaining questions that I think are significant. And talk about where we go from here and where this leaves Ethereum.
Hey, Bankless Nation, it's David. If you're hearing this, that's because you are listening to the free Bankless podcast feed. Did you know that there is a premium Bankless RSS feed? The premium feed has extra interviews that I do for my own personal research and just deeper questions that I want answered about the crypto industry. Questions that I want to answer so I can be more informed as an investor, both at Bankless Ventures and also just in my own personal portfolio too. Also, there are no ads, which means if you listen to the premium feed instead of the free feed, you'll get about 20 hours of your life back every year because you choose to support Bankless directly. So if you're interested in getting extra content all while skipping the ads, or you just appreciate what we do here and want us to keep doing it, we'd appreciate it if you signed up for Bankless Premium. And there is a link in the show notes to get started. Cheers to a good 2026. Few people in crypto put real skin in the game when they make public top or bottom calls. The DeFi Report is one of them. The week before the October 10th flash crash, Michael from the DeFi Report emailed his entire newsletter saying he's going aggressively risk off and sold the majority of his book from crypto into cash. This is when ETH was about $4,000 and Bitcoin was $110. Michael runs the DeFi Report, an industry-leading research platform built on data, cycle awareness, risk management, transparency, and most importantly, skin in the game. We like Michael at Bankless. We like his analysis, and that's why you hear him on the Bankless podcast about once a month. And the DeFi Report is giving Bankless listeners one free month of access to the DeFi Report. So if you're looking for some sharp, data-driven analysis to make better informed decisions around your portfolio, you can learn why and how Michael called the top and what he's doing next, all in the DeFi Report Pro. Check it out. There is a link in the show notes.
So there is the question of, if you don't have the social blessing of Ethereum and kind of the L2 beat thing saying that, hey, we love you, you're part of the alliance, right? Mm-hmm. Or if that weakens at some level, is there enough network effect to keep Base on Ethereum, to keep Arbitrum / Robinhood on Ethereum? Or do they get enticed to go the Tempo direction or the Circle Arc direction and go launch their own token and split out of the alliance? They don't have that liquidity as a thing holding them into Ethereum. Is like shared security and cost savings enough? That's an outstanding question I think some people are asking.
I don't see that, at least in this present moment. Like I said, the layer two business model is undefeated. Like it's not an alignment thing to say that you are saving millions of dollars a year by not having to do layer one validation, which is an extremely expensive and inefficient thing to do.
Okay, so that's one outstanding question. The other is, I think, if the roll-up-centric roadmap is over, if that era is over, what has replaced it? And I think we're getting glimpses of what's replaced
it. The ZKVM precompile, bro.
I know. That needs to be more specific. I think yeah. You made this point earlier. That needs to be merge-level focus. The entire community now rallies around it.
Yep.
We have pivoted. So let's talk about now, not the mistakes of the past. Let's talk about the thing that we are doing and excited mm-hmm. about. And there's not yet enough of that. I think there will be more in the months to come, but that needs to be the rallying point for Ethereum.
We need to meme the ZKVM precompile.
That's right. The other question, I think, and this is maybe where the skeptics come in, is I mentioned my tweet. I feel like Ethereum coming out of the last cycle had like, if it got shared network liquidity correct mm-hmm. across all of the L2s, it would have had a 1,000-year reign as the DeFi platform.
Like, we would have hit 10K. Like, yeah.
Some ground was lost this cycle. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. And some people look at that and say, well, this Ethereum, it's now anyone's game. So you have other chains that are, you come with ranks, maybe like Solana, BNB chain, who knows what else. Now Ethereum has lost its lead, or at least things have leveled off, and it's anyone's game right now. So that's one take. And that's what the bears would say about Ethereum. The other take, somewhat I'm more sympathetic with, is no, Ethereum actually stacked some wins in this L2 partial side quest. It did stack some genuine wins that are totally differentiated. We've made these points. And it has preserved the thing, the only thing that matters in crypto, which is Bitcoin level decentralization. And by the way, the whole ZK thing, soon to be better than Bitcoin level of decentralization. If you can have, rather than 15,000 validators, you can have hundreds of thousands of validators because you can run them on a mobile phone, for instance, and you have smart contracts. You are delivering on the Bitcoin plus smart contract vision that I think is the core of crypto and is the thing that Ethereum set out to do. So it's preserved those things despite this side quest, which is the only thing in crypto worth preserving. That's more my take.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And about like, did Ethereum lose? Like the Ethereum market cap, which is the scoreboard, is at $240 billion. The next closest thing is Binance at $88 billion. And then the next closest thing after that is Solana at $52 billion. If it was going to get flipped because of this incorrect North Star for the last 4 or 5 years, it would have already have happened. And nothing came close. And now, like, that was the window of opportunity for somebody like Solana or Binance to win against Ethereum and flip Ethereum. Did not happen. And now I actually think, like, now finally Ethereum's on the right track and is going to figure out how to cement its lead and increase its market share.
So let's close this out and let's call this cycle sort of a partial win, not a full victory for Ethereum, but a partial win. And I'm going to be looking for these signs of whether the new strategy is working or not. First of all, you got to look at, are more corporate chains actually onboarding as L2s for that sovereignty? It's been mixed so far. We get some of them, not all of them. So look for more of that. Also, app chains and these new Gen 2 L2s that are differentiated, will they win some traction? We'll see about that. We've got some promising signs, but it's still pretty early. Things like Lighter, other chains launching, we'll see. Existing L2s like Base and Robinhood, will they stay? It's part of Ethereum. If they do, that is bullish. If they start to fracture, I don't know. I mean, that's a breaking of the alliance. It's not great. Ethereum also needs to ship like hell on scaling L1 now and lean Ethereum and the ZK vision. You need to look for signs of that. And I also think I threw this in there, but Ethereum and the ETH Alliance needs to win AI. I think that's the next billions of users for Ethereum. And that's sort of white space right now. Anybody could come in and sort of win that. And lastly, I think from a price perspective, ETH needs to bounce back next cycle. It needs to prove itself as a store of value asset, not just a revenue asset. That's what I'm looking for.
Next cycle, we can't have just a partial win.
There you go. Bankless Nation, none of this has been financial advice. We're going to end it there. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in. But thanks for hanging with us on the Bankless journey. We'll see you next time.